We're speaking with First District Senator Scott Hernan. Scott was elected in 2022, is entering his second year in the Idaho legislature representing our district, which covers Boundary and most of Bonner County. Scott, thanks for making time to talk with us today.
You're welcome, Chris.
Yes, I know you're kind of busy.
15 ways into Sunday.
Ready for the session, which starts on Monday, as a matter of fact. But let's circle back on your first year in the legislature, since that was last year. What did you come away with from your first go, and did you learn anything last year that might change the way you approach this year?
Well, first, I got a lot done last year. I carried at least 12 pieces of legislation and got 8 of them across the finish line, plus a resolution. A lot of them were local, and I'm going to do the same thing this year. There are people here in the district that have issues. Last year, one of the big ones was the Priest Lake Outlet Dam and a fishing game project that they wanted to do a siphon underneath the dam. So we ran a bill related to that, and that came from the locals up at Priest Lake. There was a contractor issue for a general contractor around the area that we ran a bill for last year. And those two crossed the finish line with several others of mine last year. And like I say, I'm going to do more of that the same this year. The advantage this year is that we have a little more time before the session, knowing we were going to be in this session. So we had just been elected last year in November, and then the session starts in January, and we didn't know any of each other. Mm-hmm. There were more than half of the legislators last year were brand new. So this year we all know each other, and we've been working together in the off season over the summer, developing legislation, building relationships. That's going to make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Review for our listeners, what committees are you assigned to?
Education and Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee, which every time they mention it in the paper, they call the Powerful Budget Setting Committee.
Well, what the legislature does comes down to the budget, right?
That's the entire reason we're there for 90 days. Yeah. It's pretty much built around the process of setting the state budget, which we're required to do every year. We're required to have a balanced budget. So that pretty much drives the process. Mm-hmm. The reason they call it powerful is all the agencies want their projects, so they're all contacting JFAC members all the time.
Mm-hmm. How many people are on that committee?
20. 10 senators, 10 House members.
Okay.
So 20 out of the 105 legislators sit on that committee. Mm-hmm.
Well, coming up in 2024, what are some of the big issues you anticipate the legislature to take up this year?
So one of the ones that I think is going to be contentious, and I wish it wouldn't be, is what's called a convention of states. So there's going to be a lot of money this election cycle coming up in May, in the May primary. So there will be pressure during this legislative session over passing a resolution related to an Article 5 convention. So that would empower, they would make Idaho be like the 27th or 28th state toward 34 states agreeing to call a constitutional convention. And the idea that it would precipitate the Congress of the United States to have a either call the convention or to propose constitutional amendments to the United States Constitution. And this is such a far off thing, really, because we're still pretty far from 34 states, but I expect it to be kind of a possibly bitter political fight with a lot of money involved. That's going to be unfortunate.
So what are the pros and cons of calling a constitutional convention? I know one is that it could open the whole Constitution up to some kind of amendment.
If you have a constitutional convention in the states, there are no limits on what they can consider. Now, technically, their legislatures that send the delegates to the convention could constrain their own delegates. Like, for example, Idaho could say, please don't consider anything but these amendments. And then there could be a penalty in law so that you bind your delegates to only consider those things. There's a lot of checks and balances, though, because if you had an amendment that came out of a constitutional convention, it would still need to be ratified by 3/4 of the state. So it's going to have to go back to the state legislatures for ratification. I think there's a lot of basically guardrails built into the system that you're not going to end up with anything that nobody wants. And so that's Article 5. It's in the United States Constitution. So I like to describe myself as 53% on the convention of states. In other words, I'm not going to be way out there arguing for it, but I'm not opposing it either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very high bar that must be met in order to amend the Constitution. I don't think it's been done, and you probably know better than I do. When was the last time? Where was it?
Well, successful? It's been a lot of years since 1991 or 1990, I think, was the last ratified amendment, but there have been none that have ever come out of a convention of states. So to suggest that all of a sudden after 250 years of being a nation that we're going to suddenly have a convention of states that's going to produce an actual body of work, proposed amendments. I don't foresee that happening anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a big, bigger than Idaho question right there. What else do you see the legislature taking up?
We're much more constrained on the budget this year. So last year we had these huge increases for especially the public education budget, and the money simply isn't there this year. So when we're projecting revenues, which the Legislative Services Office, which are our financial analysts that work for the legislature, they do a very good job, and the governor's office as well, of forecasting tax revenue versus expenses that are already planned. And we're basically looking at maybe a 3% increase in everything across the board, whereas last year we had a $1.5 billion projected surplus. And so we were able to give $300 million of property tax relief to homeowners, which everybody just saw recently on their property tax bills. Many of us saved 17-18%. And we're not going to be able to do anything like that this year, so it's going to be a pretty conventional budget increase year over year. And so a lot of the legislation this year is also going to have to be limited because there won't be a lot of new initiatives that can cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Is there a projected surplus this year? I know it's going to be much smaller at minimum, but do you know what the projection is right now?
We're looking at about maybe $200 million. There's a total of $400 million in the projected surplus at the moment, but Alex Adams, the governor's budget director, likes to always leave about $200 million on the bottom line just in case, and the legislature agrees with that in theory. Mm-hmm. And so that's
to provide the margin in case it doesn't come in.
Right, because sometimes that does happen. Yeah. If we had a downturn later this year, tax revenues are going to drop off. You may not see as much in the way of revenues. That can change month over month, so we analyze it monthly throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at about $200 million that we have that we could either cut taxes or increase spending. And of course, we've got to increase spending to some extent to make up for inflation, to raise wages, and those sorts of things for state workers. And so that's going to eat up pretty much the $200 million.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is some legislation you intend to carry yourself?
Quite a few related to education. So probably the one I'm most excited about is a constitutional amendment that is going to place into the Idaho Constitution, if I get 2/3 in the House and the Senate, and the voters approve it in November, just a clear right to send your kids to private school or to homeschool them. We just don't have any constitutional protections for that. Idaho is a great state when it comes to the laws for private schools and for homeschooling. But while we have that strength, we really should put those kinds of rights into the Constitution because we seemingly have opposite rights related to public education. And I want to make sure that we're covering all the ways that kids are schooled in Idaho and make sure that each way is provisioned for in the Idaho Constitution. So while we have strength, we're going to do that.
So my question on that particular one, because I had spotted your column in which you said that was one you're going to go for, it's not really an issue right now. You're saying you don't want it to become an issue in the future that parents might be restricted in some fashion about sending their kids to private school.
Yeah, even more so, to have a constitutional amendment shows you have to be operating from a position of strength. It's not usually legislating something that's on the margins or that's 50-50. We truly, Democrats and Republicans, have put in place over the last several decades great laws related to homeschooling and private schooling. And while we have that strength, we should put those into our Constitution. A lot of the things in the Constitution are those things that are broadly accepted, and they end up in the Constitution because there's such broad acceptance of the principle. And so I think that is the reason you get it there, is so that you're essentially preserving what we have now for future generations of Idahoans. Whereas if it was up to the legislature, you know, that can change much more frequently or sooner than we would expect.
Okay. Other legislation that you might be intending to bring forward?
Yeah, a couple more related to education. So we saw an issue over in West Bonner this past summer after the recall election. There was concern if one of the trustees, there were only 3 seats filled on a 5-seat board, and if one of the trustees hadn't showed up, it's not clear in Idaho law. So if you only have 2 out of 3 that show up for a meeting, can they do business? And the Idaho Attorney General's office had a little discussion among their attorneys, and I agree that the code would seem to suggest that they wouldn't be able to do business.
Because they don't have a full quorum with two out of five seats, even though two seats are basically unfilled at that point.
That's exactly right. So I want to make sure that of the filled seats that they have, that we better define the quorum requirement so that if there are only three out of five seats actually filled, that they can do business with two trustees present. Because I think they need to be able to continue to do business no matter what situations come up.
Yeah, that was apparent from that whole situation in West Bonner. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Another education bill?
Yeah, another education bill. We ran it last year. It passed the Senate. And I've talked to the House. It didn't get a hearing in the House because we started it very late. But I have already talked to the House Education Committee chair, and she likes the idea. I've changed the bill a little bit to suit some of her interests, and it's called a teacher spending account. So what it would be designed to do is every year teachers incur hundreds of dollars of expenses, typically out of their own pocket, for materials for their classroom. And this would give them a reimbursement mechanism where they can go ahead and submit their receipts. Let's say they went to a yard sale or a library book sale, and they could get reimbursed for those expenses for materials they provided for their classroom. And so we're going to run that. It's called a teacher spending account. I expect we'll have success on that this year.
And so how much would you budget for that?
So what'll be clear is we're not going to take it from any existing budgets, and you have a certain number of teachers across the state, and we're probably going to try to give them at least several hundred dollars per teacher. So however many the teacher count is, and I don't have a current number of that, but that'll be about what we try to budget, and that'll be a separate bill that we would run in JFAC. Once we pass the teacher spending account, then we would set an appropriation amount for that. Mm-hmm. And that would have to come out of that $200 to $300 million that we expect to be able to put towards some of these legislative initiatives.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's circle back on the tax question. Do you foresee any more property tax reform or other types of tax reform?
Well, you know, what I would like to do is adjust the homeowner's exemption to follow the moving average across the nation. So we've been stuck at a fixed dollar amount, and I would rather adjust it to an index so that it moves. It should be about double what it is right now. It's 125,000 change right now, and it probably needs to be about 240,000 to basically represent for homeowners what it was originally intended to do. What happens is if that homeowner's exemption isn't moving, then at the time it was set where you created a balance between all property tax type payers, commercial, agricultural, homeowners, we've gotten out of balance. The commercial and the agricultural are paying less a proportion of local property tax than homeowners over the years. I'd like to get that balance back, but my understanding is you would think that would be a really popular idea and easy to do, but my understanding is there's a lot of resistance in the legislature to that idea. We had a bill for that last year and it didn't pass. And but I'm looking at a couple of other options. I just don't know exactly what they're going to look like yet.
Does that mean that the commercial and agricultural taxes would, if they take a bigger share of the burden, does that mean that they're going to pay more?
Yeah, so what happens right now is over the last 6 years, commercial and agricultural burden has gone down as a portion of the pie. So they've been paying less than they historically did. Mm-hmm. Each year they pay a little bit less and the homeowners pay a little bit more. And this would shift that back. So yes, commercial and agricultural would go ahead and pick up more of the property tax burden. So this is just tax shifting. None of it is a tax cut. Mm-hmm. And I always remind people, all property tax is local. So if you really have an issue with property tax in the end, it's not about what the state legislature does. It's about what your local taxing districts
County
do.
Commissioners, school districts,
yep.
Cities.
Ambulance districts, fire and library and those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One question I'm asking all the legislators, since it's a big issue that the legislature deals with, is roads. You foresee anything in the roads or highways that might affect our two northern counties?
There's a lot of plans for development up here, and we have long-term bonds, and we still have some money from the federal government allocated to infrastructure projects. There was the JRA, the Infrastructure and Jobs Act, that has money allocated to roads that have not yet been spent. And I expect we're going to see some of that money coming up this way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we have a regrettably small amount of time to talk about stuff. We have only a few minutes left. But elections are coming up. And I haven't seen an official announcement. Are you going to be running again?
I will be running again for re-election. Yeah, you hardly get anything done in 2 years, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to ask about the tenor we can expect in this year's elections. There's been a lot of conflict between parties and within the Republican Party that are driven by, you know, honest differences of opinion, I think. Mm-hmm. What is your take on the divisions within the party, and do you think it's healthy or bad for the party to have a diversity of viewpoints within the party that are contesting some of these issues?
Overall, I think debate is healthy as long as people are respectful to each other. However, along that line, I would say nationally, I don't find a lot of respect in politics. So, and I'll give you an example. Already in this election cycle, we've seen votes completely misrepresented here in Idaho. So Republicans that are serving right now in the Senate voted against a bill last year that gave $15 million to Micron Corporation to train semiconductor workers. That was the reason they voted against the bill. And there was a door hanger during this new election cycle that was put in their districts that said they voted to defund the police because they voted against that bill. Because included in that bill, there were about 10 things in the bill, and one of them was $550,000 for the Idaho State Police for training. I voted against that bill. We didn't oppose that. We didn't oppose the $68 million to pay for last year's summer wildfire season for fire suppression. What we opposed was the $15 million that was also in the bill for Micron to train semiconductor workers. Mm-hmm. And they said that we voted to defund the police. And that is unfair rhetoric, and I expect we're going to see a whole lot of it. It's just straight up deception of the voters, and I don't approve.
I guess that would go to the question of why can't we have clean bills that just deal with these individual things instead of lumping,
you know, and
it
for the most part we do, except like that bill is an example. And so this year I'm going to try to get the chairs ahead of time. That was a cash transfer bill, like move the money from this bank account to these 10 places. And I'm going to try to get the chairs to break those up so that we have a clean vote so it can be properly interpreted. But I will tell you, I know for a fact that the people who are putting out that flyer are not acting in good faith. I know they're not, because they know the reasons those legislators voted against that bill.
Well, we're going to see more of that, I'm sure, in these coming months with the election coming down. Scott Herndon, I want to say thanks for coming in and speaking with us. How do your constituents get a hold of you if they want to bend your ear about something?
Best email is my Senate email, sherndon@senate.idaho.gov. And my cell phone, personal cell phone, 208-610-2680. Text or call. Definitely welcome as many people contacting me as need to.
Mm-hmm. Scott Herndon, our first district senator, thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome. Thanks, Chris.